Hello and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am not Tyler Smith.
I am David Bax. Tyler Smith is still on assignment raising babies.
Assigned twins.
Yes, he's been assigned twins.
Just like, I was hoping there was like some bodyguard movie where someone had to guard like the Osment twins or something.
Oh, probably, no, yeah.
I'm thinking of, not the Osment.
The Olsen twins.
Olsen twins, yeah.
The Osmonds are brother and sister, but not Donnie and Marie are not twins. No. Is that right?
I don't know. Maybe they are. I can tell them apart.
I guess that's true. But I mean, Tyler, I don't think Tyler's twins are identical. But
really?
I don't know how much more we are supposed to say about them anyway.
Well, fair enough.
And I also could be wrong about what I just said because I haven't actually met them.
Well, and they're babies right now.
They all look the same anyway. Wow. You and I are continuing to plug away at the show from our respective quarantine pads.
Yeah.
As a sign of how long we're going to keep doing this, the TCM Fest has already announced that next year's TCM Fest in April of 2021 will be a virtual festival. Now this year they didn't really have a traditional festival. They just did a what they called the at home, which they showed the at home special at home editions, what they called them, which they showed popular movies that had played at previous TCM fests on their network and on their app, and it was a lot of great stuff, and they showed some of the talks and stuff and panels, and you and I and Julie and Kyle watched a boatload of great movies and talked about it way early in the quarantine.
Yeah, when we all thought this would be very temporary.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what are your thoughts on this being a true virtual festival, and what are your predictions, given that that TCM has revealed very little about what this is actually going to be and how it's going to work?
For the most part, I've been digging like the virtual fest thing. We rented some stuff from the New York Film Festival. We're going to watch something from the Chicago Film Festival tonight. Of course, AFI Fest starts, well, as of this recording, starts tomorrow. By the time people hear this, it'll be in full swing.
Yes, and also tune back in 2 weeks from now for Scott and I doing an AFI Fest wrap-up.
Yeah, so by and large, I've been digging it. I do think with TCM Fest, it's like so much of the pleasure is being there and seeing, especially because they have like archival prints and they have like special presentations with live orchestras. Of course, like guests you wouldn't normally see, all that kind of stuff is going to be tougher to replicate, I think, than with most film festivals, where like with New York or with Toronto or with whatever else, like the draw is the premiere of some movie and everyone's seeing that for the first time.
Yeah, the closest thing I can think of is Will, because I know not always, but often, especially like opening night TCM Fest, which I usually don't get to go to as a member of the press, will be like the premiere of a brand new restoration of something, you know?
Sure, but even that, so, like when you're getting that over streaming, you know,
right, it's
theoretically
be
it's all the same, but it's a little, at least a little compressed and maybe your bandwidth isn't great or whatever else.
Yeah, but I was saying that could be like the hook, the thing that says, let me sign up for this festival, as opposed to just renting the movie, right, you know, or watching it on HBO Max or whatever, which I'm sure like a lot of these movies already will exist. Like, are they going to try and either do new restorations or sort of premiere things that aren't currently otherwise available to stream or rent on demand?
Yeah, because they do have a ton of stuff every year that isn't available on demand or on disc or whatever. But most of that is because it's on some archival print. So it's like, are they really gonna scan those prints, make digital files, all that kind of stuff? And then I wonder how the guests will work. If they'll be like part of a presentation you have to tune in on at for a specific time, because most online festivals have a window like 2 days or 5 days or whatever, and you can play the movie whenever. But for guests, maybe it has to be a specific time. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
It does seem, yeah, if they're, I guess they would have to announce it early if their plan is to scan and make a bunch of streamable files, which depending on how robust their lineup is, they better have already started. Given how these things tend to go, but whatever it is, I'm sure that I'll tune in for it, because TCM Fest is a milestone every year, a hallmark of my year as a as a movie watcher. So we'll be watching that. I'm sure we'll do some sort of, still be in quarantine, in next April.
And
we'll do some sort of, wrap up episode probably with, Julie and Kyle again.
Fantastic.
All right. In the meantime, you know, all these things we're doing virtually, I'm watching a lot of things on my laptop. I'm listening to a lot of things on my laptop. I'm Zooming right now on a laptop and always using my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles, and colorful colors. You get my green ones right here. They look great. They sound great. Tyler and I use them each and every day. Can't vouch for Scott. Today I was using them to listen to the new 4-song EP by James Blake. I'm a big James Blake fan, and I was really able to get my groove on listening to the new James Blake songs on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds that are available at a low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Now, Scott,
I do hate paying for shipping.
Right. Yes.
Everybody does. It feels like extra tax.
Yeah. At least they got this. Is I'm ripping off the joke from like a commercial from a few years ago with Nick Thune. But it used to always be shipping and handling.
Right.
Now, well, at least you're not paying for handling anymore.
Yeah, but things are still automated. You know, they just throw it in a box, throw it to the machine or whatever.
Like a robot arm pulls it off. There's no handling involved.
Exactly. At the big tweaked warehouse, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Scott, let's get into it, shall we? Now, as listeners might have guessed based on the spooky version of the theme music that I hopefully remembered to put at the top of this episode, I have forgotten before. So that's why I always say that. This is our annual Halloween episode. We are, I guess, doing it 1 week earlier than we would, because next week is an episode whose number ends with a 0, but is not divisible by 50. More on that next week.
When those required episodes with that end of 0 and not divisible of 50 interrupt a themed episode like this?
Does it, it doesn't, what phrase did you use? Does it what?
Upset you. Because
it doesn't
you
upset
live a very
me.
Ordered life in a lot of ways.
No, yeah, upset isn't the right word. It does sometimes stress me out, like, especially, I'm less bothered by this, the holiday thing. I'm okay with doing it like 1 week earlier.
Yeah.
When the profile episodes fuck with the end of the year stuff, that
watch out,
because we've talked. I forgot to mention that I was on a podcast called Monkey Off My Backlog, which is a great name. It was a fun podcast in which they have guests on and they have themed episodes, and the guest picks something that they is a big blind spot for them and watches it. So for Halloween, for October, for spooky times, they had me on, and I finally watched the crossed off my shameful blind spot list, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. So I finally seen that movie. It's brilliant. You can hear me talk about it on Monkey Off My Backlog, and you can also hear me talk at length about my list making habits, crutches, pathologies, whatever you want to call them. And yeah, so to get back to your question, yeah, a lot of times my uppermost list, my first priority list, has to do with due dates of like stuff that I either have to review, have to talk about in the podcast. So sometimes at the end of the year, when I'm doing a lot of catch up to try and like make sure I've seen enough stuff to talk about on the other end of the year episodes.
Yeah.
And then a profile comes in and means like, oh, I have to get this shit done even a week earlier. So that's when it stresses me out. When it, to me, especially with something like Halloween, like yes, Halloween is October 31st, but really Halloween is October. So like, as long as we can get a Halloween episode up in October, I'm not that bothered by it. This year we have, yeah, the profile and the fact that we haven't talked about this, but AFI is a month earlier than it's always been. And I don't know why they did that. And if that's going to be a permanent change.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm okay with it though.
I'm okay with that. It was very stressful when I thought I was going to be coming back from Argentina, literally the morning that AFI Fest started. And I was like, when am I actually, like, whenever I come back from vacation, there's always a period of like trying to get back into my normal life. And if I was going to come back and then immediately have a week of AFI Fest, it was like, I'm going to be unmoored for like 3 weeks in a row.
I've done that. It's not fun.
Yeah. So, that was kind of stressing me out a little bit, but, I think, in the big picture, yes, I'm happy with the earlier AFI Fest, but we'll talk about that in a couple weeks. Right now, we're talking about spooky movies, and I will say this episode was suggested to me. Well, sometimes things happen in conjunction. It was suggested to me by my wife. She was like, why don't you talk about movies about witches, or witche movies, as I'm going to say it. But then also recently you were, and this will tie back at AFI Fest, we can't seem to escape it, but you were watching a movie called The Juniper Tree, which and I think two AFI Fests ago, my wife and I had gone to a screening. The AFI Fest often does screenings, usually of new restorations of older movies. And we had gone to a screening of The Juniper Tree. And based on your Twitter, you had essentially the same reaction that I had, which is early on in Juniper Tree being like, oh, this movie's about witches. And like suddenly being extra into it because of that. So clearly you and I have an affinity for witchy movies. Before we get into talking about some of our favorites or most notables, why do you like movies about witches?
That's a great question. I've been trying to think about that because I'm not like inherently the biggest horror fan. Most of these kind of monster genre movies, I don't really find that interesting. Like inherently, there are plenty of like individual examples. Like there are individual zombie movies I dig, individual vampire movies, but like I don't want to see a movie because it's a vampire movie. In fact, usually quite the opposite. But witch movies, there is something interesting there. I think it might have something to do with the fact that in a lot of these genres, in some ways, the psychological aspect is either about kind of tantalizing or terrifying women. And there's something like super empowering about a lot of witch movies, even like no matter how dark they are, there's this element to them where women are kind of self-actualizing and like finding their full potential, getting in touch with themselves. And sometimes it's taken like very positive ends and sometimes it's taken like super fucked up ends. And either way, that's a pretty invigorating premise. And just the fact that like historically the witch scare has been used to outright kill so many women, like it's kind of like a cool reclamation of that whole thing.
It seems like now I'm feeling bad that this podcast is two men today. We should have had
Natalie on.
But it seems like we have similar reasons for being drawn to these movies. Not to try and sound like Joss Whedon or whatever, but I've always been interested in feminist literature and films and sort of feminist reading of things. And it does seem like witches are a place, an area in which you can have really complicated takes on being a woman in this in our world or something like our world. And then I also just like, as a guy who likes metal and stuff, I just like the like occult imagery and stuff. And that's why there's I'll start by dividing which movie, when I was making my list, I was kind of dividing which movies into two basic camps.
Okay.
One is, and sometimes they can be good witches, sometimes they can be bad witches, but in one camp, it's just a witch is basically just a lady who does magic.
For sure.
Whereas in the other camp, the one that I tend to be more into, it's a woman who has connected herself to something to some deeper, older evil, pledge some sort of fealty to something that is often literally Satan, but right. if not literally Satan, something Satan like, or a deep dark evil. And there's something that like, and that gets into the complicated area you were talking about, where these women are empowered, but also they've given up something of their self, or they are damned because of their power, or something like that at the same time. I definitely, for a recent take on this that was not literally Satan, but Gretel and Hansel from earlier this year is a movie I think in, I guess, minor spoilers, there's two witches really, or more maybe if you
yeah.
go into the flashbacks, but different versions of using that empowerment. You know, you see the, now I'm forgetting the actress's name, Alice... who played the older witch. You see her as a very powerful person, but that power always comes at the expense of others. And then at the end of the movie, you see, again, spoilers, but the newly empowered Gretel sort of make, we don't know how successful it is because it's, you know, an open-ended thing, but sort of seem intent on finding a different way of using her power, a less predatory way, and a way that would be less damaging to her own soul as well, perhaps.
Yeah, and it's kind of, that's a slightly more empowering end to it than, again, spoiler alert, for The Witch from 2015, which is, like, really one of the best witch movies, but very much, like, embraces the darkness of its ending of a woman finding, or a young girl in this case, finding a sense of empowerment, but you are very clearly aware of what she's giving up in the process and what she's kind of like pledging herself to in order to gain some semblance of independence.
Alice Krieg is her name, from Gretel and Hansel. And that reminds me, now I don't want to get too far afield. This is a movie podcast, and I have not watched any of the Netflix series of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, but I know you're a comic book guy like I am. Did you read that series?
No.
It's one of the best comics of the decade, I think. Is so much about like all the great stuff we're talking about, and is also super, super dark and unsettling at many times. I know the TV series is from the same creator, but I don't know how much they committed to the upsetting Satan sure. stuff of that comic book. So why did you have any now we've gotten into our personal interests in witches. I talked about sort of broad camps. Did you find your list falling into any broader camps? I don't want to use the word broad too much in this episode about witches.
No, I didn't really get mine organized in any demonstrable way. I did notice that trend that you were mentioning, because when I was first telling Julie about us doing the episode, I was like, well, it is kind of like there's a general interesting thing. I think I took the same tack you did, where it does seem more interesting when there is some element of like pledging themselves to Satan. And yeah. I was like, that's kind of a cool thing about witch stuff in general. She's like, I don't think like on Bewitched they were really like pledging themselves to Satan. I was like, oh yeah, I guess you're right. And like the more I was going through the list, like, yeah, there is kind of that like woman or girl who does magic, and
something
like Kiki's Delivery Service is probably the best example of that, where it's like the super, I mean, not consistently upbeat, but it's in the end a super heartwarming tale about a young witch just finding herself out in the world.
So yeah, I mean, that's exactly, I mean, that's what a lot of the Harry Potter, like, it's totally. There's no Satan, you know, there are good witches and bad witches in Harry Potter, and that as much as I like those movies, I mean, it's problematic to say that now, they're not my kind of witches necessarily.
And I'm not too steeped in Harry Potter, as people who listen to the commentary know. But that's the thing where they're like born with it, right?
Yes. Some people are. Everyone's either born with it or not. Sometimes it comes through the bloodline, and sometimes you've got someone who's muggle born, which is a non-magical born person who manifests these powers, you know, around the time they turn 10 or 11 or so.
Sure. Yeah, that, because that kind of seems to be the other end of it, is like there's no kind of origin to it. There's no like spell they have to cast. It's just kind of like a mutant power almost.
Yeah, but they, like with mutant powers, they go to school to learn how to sort of control them. Yeah, you know,
that's the way mutant powers just work.
And
you know their nature.
Well, I'm thinking specifically of like X-Men.
No, mutants, I know.
But and the same again, just like the X-Men, that school, which seems to be very well funded and sort of posh and Tony, also is constantly being attacked. It's a very dangerous place for kids to go.
Hey, nothing like learning on the job. Some kids are growing up too soft. You know, you got to put them out there.
So what do you think? Like, I would say, I know you, because you're more studious than I am, you watched some movies in preparation for this. The only one I watched in preparation for this, because it was such a blind spot in terms of my generation, was Hocus Pocus. And I don't know if you've seen it, but I am sad to report that it is not good. It is sort of, I think I felt watching Hocus Pocus what Tyler has talked about on the podcast feeling when he watched Empire Records, because he wasn't 12 years old when he saw Empire Records. He saw it as an adult. So he's like, what is this bullshit? And that's the correct response. But when you see the movie at the right age, it imprints on you. And because I didn't see Hocus Pocus as a tween, it just seemed like it seemed like a bad kind of camp, like a cynical kind of camp, not real camp. And also just so embarrassingly corny. There's a kid who doesn't want to dress up really for Halloween because he's too cool for school, right? Yeah. And so he puts on like a baggy sweatshirt and like has his hat sideways. And when his parents ask what he is for Halloween, he says, "I'm a rap singer." Which, like, even in 1993,
no,
people, we knew to say rapper.
Yeah. I'm not surprised the, you know, super hip Walt Disney Company of the 90s would get that wrong.
Yeah. But Hocus Pocus is, they're bad. What's so funny is, like, all the iconography of the movie is these three witches that I had somehow gotten in my head that they were the good guys of the movie. They're not. They're the bad guys, but they're also, like, fun, or at least they're supposed to be fun. Which is why it's weird when we learn, oh, they have pledged fealty to Satan, because there's a comic set piece in which, because they show up on Halloween, and so Gary Marshall plays a guy who's handing out candy to kids, and he's dressed as Satan, and they think he's Satan, and they go into his house, and Gary Marshall's wife is played by Penny Marshall, which is weird. that seems like there's all kinds of stuff. There's so many jokes in Hocus Pocus about the kid being a virgin, when it's like this movie seems like it's aimed at like 8 to 10 year olds, but also has stuff about like this dorky high school kid's still a virgin, can you believe it? And also Satan. So very uneven movie in many ways, and not in a good way. I didn't care for it.
I mean, kids movies back then were slightly darker, I think, than they are today, too.
And sometimes credit. Yeah, and sometimes in very good ways. I think about a movie that I put on my list, even though I couldn't remember. There's a number of movies on my list that I couldn't remember if the character is ever actually referred to as a witch in the movie.
Sure.
It clearly has that. And so Ursula in The Little Mermaid is...
I think she is a witch.
They call her a sea witch or something like that, right? I think I meant to look it up. But she's
I haven't seen The Little Mermaid literally since I was a child.
I probably haven't either, but I watched it a lot as a kid, and Ursula scared the crap out of me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, at least in the wiki synopsis, she's referred to several times as a sea witch, so I'm sure the movie does.
Okay. So yeah, I like those kids movies from especially the 90s that I grew up with that are darker. You've got like again, I'm not sure, is Morticia Adams referred to as a witch? I'm not sure.
Am I in any incarnation?
That one, at least Barry Sonnenfeld's The Addams Family movie, is surprisingly dark in its humor. There's a lot of like arterial blood spray as a sort of big broad laugh moments in the movie, and the newer animated one didn't quite have all of that stuff. yeah, it wasn't as dark as it could have been. There's a there's some goofy like Adam Smith type jokes that work in it, like Lurch, who's the, you know, I don't know how much you know about the Addams Family lore and mythos. Lurch is the big guy, but he's also the butler.
Okay.
And in the animated one, there's a scene where he like runs his finger on the banister and looks at it and realizes there's no dust on the banister. So he gets a vacuum out and like turns it in reverse, I guess, and blows dust all over the stairs and the banister. That's a very, if you watched the Addams Family TV show as a kid, that's a very, very sure. That kind of show joke that I appreciated.
That's a feature that's always on cartoon vacuums and never on real vacuums.
The reverse. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, let's just throw the switch on that undoes vacuum. Yeah. Which is something you definitely want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you brought up Disney movies, and a lot of those use witches as villains. You know, you got Snow White, I think. Sleeping Beauty is the same thing. There's just a lot of those. I think that's like our introduction to witches at a young age, is just kind of generic old haggard woman who's in some way jealous of a younger woman and is doing some sort of magic to do away with her.
Certainly... Like when I think of a witch, like I think of the Snow White and the Seven Dwarves witch and the witch from like, just, I mean, in terms of what I assume people think a witch looks like,
I go Wizard of Oz.
Okay. But it's very, very similar. There's like a long nose is usually a wart or a mole. Got right. Wart. Which even the, and again, it's been a long time that came up, she's called a witch, but the old hag woman in Spirited Away even has like a big mold and a big nose.
Oh yeah.
So is modeled after the classic witch. Yeah. Wizard of Oz is certainly on my list, although that's not a satanic witch at all. There are good witches and bad witches in the Wizard of Oz world.
Although the good witches are still fine with killing the bad witches and just taking stuff from them.
That's right. And it's been a very long time since I've seen that movie.
Yeah. That's one I actually didn't grow up with. I like had to sneak it out in high school, and I like made a bunch of friends watch it, and they're like, why are we watching The Wizard of Oz? I was like, cause I've never seen it. It's supposed to be so good.
Did you find it to be good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd like to see it again. I'd like to catch a screening of it sometime. Not surrounded by high schoolers mouthing off at it.
Well, you know what I mean, this is a few years ago now, but at LACMA, they used to do like these Friday night screenings at LACMA, and they showed Return to Oz, which is a movie that I adored in high school because I was the kind of kid who loved how like weird and fucked up Return to Oz is. Have you seen that one?
I have not seen that one.
Yeah, that's it's a lot of fun, and it's but speaking of, like, I can't imagine. Like I said, I saw it in high school. Some of the stuff is so upsetting and just like nightmarish in that movie that I'm surprised that kids were allowed to watch it. But you know what? That's my generation. Everybody gets a trophy type of.
Everybody gets a trophy and a fucked up memory at the movies. Well, that movie stars Fruja Balk, who also starred in another movie I caught up with this week called The Craft, which is super awesome, and you would totally dig.
Oh, yeah. I have never seen The Craft. There was, when I was in eighth grade, I went to the movies with my friends the night The Craft opened. And it was rated R. We weren't allowed to buy tickets to The Craft, but it was the thing to do, go see The Craft opening night. And so, I recently told this same story when Paul Walter Hauser was on the podcast, but I'll tell it again anyway. So my friends and I bought tickets to Flipper starring Paul Hogan. and then just decided to walk into the Craft instead. That was the whole thing, because they would let us buy tickets to Flipper.
Right.
Walked into the theater for The Craft and realized, oh, apparently my entire eighth grade class had the same idea. And this is like, the theater for The Craft was like a fire hazard, just kids everywhere, overflowing seats. Like there was no place to stand or sit in this theater. And so my friend Eric and I were like, we can't. we can't do this. And then we were like, do you want to go see Flipper? And we're like, let's. And so we walked to Flipper, it already started. We watched like 5 minutes and we're like, this sucks. And so we went back to the theater manager and we were like, we changed our minds. Can we get our money back? And he clearly didn't believe us, but was at least cool about it and gave us our money back.
Was there?
So no, I never saw The Craft.
Right. Was there no more believable movie you could have bought a ticket for?
I can't remember what was out that weekend. It wasn't like this was the Clarkson Six. This was like pre-stadium seating. Okay. It wasn't like It wasn't like there were four different, you know, screens showing The Craft and opening night. Like, this was the place to go in, you know, that we could at least get to, that had you know, would have been another couple miles down Clarkson, after Clarkson turns into Olive, if you can imagine, before you can get to a real multiplex in the West St. Louis suburbs.
Yeah, but The Craft is really cool. It starts out like kind of in a familiar kind of high school satire vein, where this young woman or young girl, sorry, she's either an older girl or a younger woman, depending on how you want to put it. Okay. She moving from out of town, going to this new school, doesn't really fit in, but she notices this group of girls who, rumor has it around the school, are super into witchcraft, and it just so happens that she has these sort of unformed magical powers that have caused various issues, and is probably part of the reason that she had to move towns, because she has some darkness in her past. And so it starts out in a very cool, kind of acute vein of like social groups and misfits and all that kind of stuff. But then it just starts evolving more and more into steering into the witchcraft of it all. And it just totally embraces that side of it, to the extent that kind of the climax is this like completely surreal, like fever dream nightmare thing of all these witches doing battle in all these ways that like aren't totally defined. I think some of the trouble any movie about magic gets into is that it starts to create too many rules for itself. And this does to an extent, but not over like specifically what they can do moment to moment. So they start unleashing all these crazy powers that the movie just accepts because they're witches. And it totally works because it's so well done and really well performed. Fruja Balk's awesome in it, and the rest of the girls are too. You missed out in eighth grade, but I still think it's well worth catching up on.
Yeah, well, I mean, the rest of the cast includes one of my personal faves, Neve Campbell.
Yep.
Also Robin Tooney and Rachel True. And director Andrew Fleming's follow-up feature is the sort of underappreciated in its time, but now sort of cult classic Dick, with Kirsten Dunst and Michelle Williams.
I realized that was the same director. Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah.
The other one I caught up with this week is another kind of generational fave, Practical Magic. Not as good as The Craft, but Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman playing witches guarantees at least a few good scenes, and especially when their aunts, who are like super witches, are played by Diane Wiest and Stockard Channing. Awesome scenes when it's all four of them together. The whole thing's kind of misshapen and uneven, but it totally has some incredible imagery. There's this cool shot, because the movie's kind of initial event is the two of them separating, and Nicole Kidman runs off to LA to live the high life. But then at some point she like feels like called back to check on Sandra Bullock and make sure she's all right, 'cause she gets like some witchy intuition. And so the shot of her like driving across the country just like shows the foreground kind of transforming in front of her, all those red skies and stuff. It's a really cool like rear projection effect.
Oh wow. Has like playing things. Like playing Cruisin' USA.
Yes. Do you remember that? Like playing Cruisin' USA.
I told you this off mic, but working in video stores in the late 90s and early 2000s, I always conflated in my mind Practical Magic and Stepmom. They're very different movies, but the VHS covers are very similar. Similar font, similar autumnal color scheme. It's both like two women looking off to the side together. I always for some reason, like they're connected in my mind. I've only seen Stepmom, not Practical Magic.
Yeah, so you mentioned this, and I've looked up the covers, and I still don't, I don't see it.
Okay.
Aside from having two women on them, there seems to be almost no aesthetic connection.
It's a very similar font, white lettering, similar font. Again, orangish, brownish, autumnal color scheme. For the longest time, I was like, which one is Julia Roberts in? But then
she could be in either of them, that's fair.
Yeah, but then I saw Stepmom.
Other kind of generational faves from this kind of 80s, 90s period. Have you seen The Witches of Eastwick?
I've never seen The Witches of Eastwick.
Another movie I think you would dig. They talked about it a bit on the most recent season of You Must Remember This, because Polly Platt, who the season was about, did the production design for it. The production design is super awesome. And they bring up on that podcast like a number of issues with the movie. I guess the original story was a lot sharper in its kind of critique of, or not critique of feminism, but feminist critique of just kind of the way the world works and the way gender hierarchies are organized. And there's some of that in the movie, doesn't totally come across, but like the pleasure of the movie is just in the cast. I mean, it's got Cher as a witch, you got Michelle Pfeiffer as a witch, and I can't remember the third
woman. Susan Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon, again, that's why I forgot. I was like, there's no way it's also Susan Sarandon. But
Stepmom. Again, Stepmom and its connections to the witchy universe.
You got the three of them as witches, and then Jack Nicholson as essentially Satan, all directed by George Miller, with, like I said, just incredible production design and music by John Williams. It's just a blast of a movie. Highly recommend it.
Now, what I have seen, I haven't seen The Witches of Eastwick. I have seen The Witches, the Nicholas Roeg movie based on the Roald Dahl story. Yeah, I saw that a lot as a kid and then watched it actually earlier this quarantine period, revisited for the first time since I was a kid. Have not yet seen the Robert Zemeckis directed remake, which is coming out in a few days from when you're hearing this, on HBO Max. Asked for a screener, who knows if I'll get one in time. what a cool movie, and really all the best Roald Dahl adaptations capture the Roald Dahl sort of the darkness of that a kid being turned into a mouse, right?
Yeah.
Is like, there's like a body horror element to that, and the fact that like they don't know how they're going to get back, it's very scary and upsetting to me. It also has the classic Roald Dahl thing of the parents dying right away.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of the backstory, is that it's always a kid whose parents are dead and then has to go live with an aunt who is either cool like this aunt or sucks like the James and the Giant Peach aunts.
Yeah, unfortunately, they changed the ending of the book where the kid remains a mouse. Naturally, in a family movie from the early 90s, that's not going to fly. But so the ending of that always felt a little disjointed to me. But other than that, yeah, I mean, you got great practical effects, got a great Angelica Houston performance. It's a pretty solid movie all around. I'm looking forward to the remake, but it's going to be hard to top.
It's definitely going to be hard to top. I'm an Anne Hathaway fan, but Angelica Houston is not to be trifled with.
I'm sure she's trifled with quite often.
The thing I remember from watching The Witches as a kid with my friends is that this tacked on scene at the end where the I guess good witch turns him back into a human boy is my friends are like giggling like, oh my god, he's naked, because when he comes back he's naked. We thought that was very funny.
It's hilarious. Don't worry, you're absolutely right. One movie that came out kind of recently that kind of seemed to be trying to tap in the same sort of vein was The House with a Clock in Its Walls, which is pretty awesome. And definitely if you're a fan of The Witches of Eastwick or any of these kind of like nostalgic kids favorites, this movie also delivers on kind of that kind of horror kid movie bend, and is kind of a good introduction for kids who might someday be into horror. Directed by Eli Roth, so it's got its horror bona fides, I guess, at least to some crowds. But it has some scenes that are genuinely tense and frightening and stuff. And it has a great, Jack Black performance.
All right. I'm trying to think if I have any other kids movies, on here. I guess I mentioned the Addams Family, and then Dark Shadows, I guess, is kind of the same, that they're like witchy or whatever. Coraline.
Oh yeah. I forgot that was a witch. Great movie.
Yeah, it really is a great movie. But I would say getting away from kids' movies, though.
Sure.
And going way back, I would say a movie that I wish, if I were like you and I had the time and dedication to watch more movies in preparation for the episode, I would have finally crossed another very old blind spot off my list. And that's, is it pronounced Haxan?
I guess. I saw it back in college. I'm not sure.
Because yeah, that's one that I've always wanted to see, especially because every October I think, oh, it'd be funny to change my Twitter name to Baxin. But then I think like that's fraudulent because I haven't seen the movie. I can't do that. I usually go
fraudulent. You might like
feels fraudulent to me.
You've seen it and like ask you about it, but other than that,
seems fraudulent to me. I haven't done it this year at all, but I usually go with Back Sabbath.
Sure.
Which movie reminds me of Mario Bava? Black Sunday is a great witch movie.
Well, I just want to say real quick that Haxan is a pretty cool movie. One that I probably unfairly discounted in college because. My teacher, I can't remember what class it was for, but she was like genuinely into the whole like Wiccan thing. And like, I'm like down with alternative lifestyles and whatever else people are into. But there is, I have the same kind of like duality with people who are really into astrology. Like in some level I can get it aesthetically, but whenever I'm like face to face with somebody, I'm like, okay, great. Terrific.
I definitely get that with astrology.
Yeah.
Because when someone like I feel like whenever someone starts talking to me about astrology, I have a second like I'm hanging on being like, hey, are you fucking with me? Like,
yeah,
is this real?
I don't want to give in too much because I don't know how if they're completely into it and then it takes too long to do stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so Haxan, Black Sunday, which is very much a movie about the kind of witches who have pledged themselves to Satan. Man, what a great movie. I had another one based on that, and now I can't remember what it was, where I was going to go from there. Oh, I could stick with Italy and go to a real schlocky movie that I happened to... I think Raro Video put out a Blu-ray a few years ago that I watched and reviewed. And it's one of, like, you know, mid-century, like 60s, 70s European horror movies all have like 18 titles for every different release. But this, at least the way it was released on Blu-ray, it was released as Revenge of the Blood Beast.
Okay.
It's a delight. It's a very nasty movie. Some of the deaths in it are very gruesome. Including the flashback to the initial drowning of the witch, the lake witch. I think Lake Witch or Witch of the Lake is one of the many titles of the movie. But this the medieval time, not medieval times like the restaurant, but the people in medieval times drowned a witch in the lake, and now that witch still terrorizes this town, including this tourist couple. And what the movie is most notable for is being like blatantly anti-communist and like the witch representing communism, and literally. At one point, like the witch is like carrying a bloody hammer and sickle.
Wow!
Yeah,
they're going for it.
Yeah, it's not subtle at all. If you can stomach some of that sort of again, I think this is early 70s, but that era of Euro like horror trash nastiness, and some of it could get really nasty. It's a fun movie. Another one that I think is actually a really good movie, but it's been so long since I've seen it. Again, I can't remember if the word witch is actually used, but The Blood Spattered Bride, which is actually a really cool movie.
I mean, it's a really cool title.
Yeah. And again, it's like, it's a sort of a young couple who are, I'm trying to think, they move into his ex-wife's house, or his late wife is dead, and then like, or maybe, but she's a witch and she like possesses the younger wife. It's one of those movies. I can't really remember what the plot is. That's not the point. I remember how cool the costume design and production design is and how nasty some of the stuff gets. And there's like a part where a woman like catches a knife with her hand and it like slices her palm open. It's a very cool movie. Also, the title of the movie is part of the inspiration for The Bride in Kill Bill. Other than that, the two movies have nothing to do with one another. But I saw it at the New Beverly, actually, and Quentin Tarantino has said before that The Bride is, because The Bride in Kill Bill is blood spattered numerous times throughout the movie. But again, other than that, the movies bear no real resemblance.
Go ahead. You mentioned communism, made me think of a Soviet witch movie called Vi, spelled V-I-Y.
Okay.
Which I saw like on a total lark at CineFamily back when it was okay to go there. Cause I had a membership at the time. And, so I would just take a chance on any random movie.
Well, in my memory, maybe time has just condensed in on itself. I feel like there wasn't that long that CineFamily was still open that we all knew.
No, absolutely. It was like 3 days or something, but
yeah,
kind of in retrospect, anytime I reference CineFamily now, I feel like I have to make some apology for it.
Yeah, Anyway. Yeah, when we were talking about like scary kids movies, I thought about the Peanut Butter Solution, which I saw at Cine Family, which is a very strange, fun movie. But yeah, Cine Family.
Yeah, and usually when I'm recalling things I saw there, I'll say I saw it theatrically. But in this case, because it was something I knew nothing about, I just wanted to mention that I went in knowing nothing, and I did it because there's no financial risk to me, because the membership, you could get into everything.
For free. Right,
it's great. But anyway, I don't really remember the setup of it. It's kind of a convoluted way to get to it, but the bulk of the movie involves a young man who's being forced for some reason to sit kind of vigil over the body of a woman whom he knows was a witch, but which the townspeople do not. And I guess like for whatever village tradition or whatever, someone needs to sit vigil. And indeed, like multiple demonic forces come to claim the body over the next 3 days, or also like claim his soul or something. I can't really remember the details of it, but it is unbelievably cool just watching this kind of nightmare descend on this guy.
So what year is it from?
67.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds very cool. As long as we're into that sort of 60s era, I'm actually going to talk about more recent movie, 60s, 70s era, but a more recent movie that intentionally recalls that era of filmmaking, and that's Anna Biller's The Love Witch, which listeners or readers of the website may remember made my top 10 list that year. It's an absolutely gorgeous recreation of a very specific age of movie making. I remember the movie that was on the back half of the bill at New Beverly with Blood Spattered Bride was a movie called Amok, which is not actually witch based. It's just sort of like, but it's sort of a cult and murdery. But Love Witch feels like a movie like Amok, just like early 70s, lavish, lacy costume design and production design. Lots of sort of bubbling cauldrons and bright colors. And, I will say, I know that and Scott, you know, especially when you're on the podcast, I like to play this character who doesn't care about seeing things on 35mm. But I will say, I saw The Love Witch on 35mm at like a press screening, not knowing really anything about it.
Right.
And it blew me away so much that I went home and I was like, to my wife, I was like, let me show you the trailer for this movie. It's so great and you're going to love it. And I pulled the trailer and I'm watching it. And I'm like, this is not the movie that I saw. Like,
that's not the same.
Yeah. So much of the pleasure of that movie was the tactility of the and the texture of the 35mm film from which it was projected. But, did you see The Love Witch?
I did. Loved it. Love that witch. Then the cool thing about that is that like for most of the movie, you have a reason to think they're like, it's just set in the '70s or whatever. And then suddenly someone just takes out a cell phone and you're like, oh yeah, I guess it's been 2015 this whole time.
Yeah. Or like, I remember like the real estate agent just like pulls up in a car out front of the house and it's like a 2015, like Ford Focus or whatever.
Going back to the '60s, we don't want to skip over probably the most famous witch movie, at least in cinephile circles, Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
Which is a complete like In League with Satan movie. So much so that I think it kind of gets overshadowed as a witch movie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I realized that I forgot to put it on again. We really should have asked Natalie to chime in on this because she was really involved. And, she was the one who was like, don't forget Rosemary's Baby. And I was like, oh, right. Of course. But yeah, because I think of it as a Satanist movie, I forget that all of them are witches.
They even spell that out.
Yeah.
Couldn't be clearer. But yeah, that's a really cool movie where every second you can tell that something is going on off screen. And it isn't until it's kind of got a similar structure to Chinatown. It's not surprising that they're both Polanski because there's this whole other movie happening just off screen of it. And as with Chinatown, you don't realize what that movie is until the very end of it.
To bounce back to a more recent movie that I think also like The Love Witch, and it's from about the same year, maybe a year before or after, that I think pulls on that, a lot of that 60s and 70s occult sort of cinema fantastique Euro horror type of witch iconography, but I don't think ever uses the word witches, is a movie that I know you love and that I like quite a bit, The Neon Demon.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that in this context.
But yeah, I mean, there is, again, they don't call it witchcraft. They don't refer to themselves as witches, but that's clearly that idea of, like, you know, so much of the witch story is about being obsessed with aging and staying versus staying young. And these, you know, you mentioned, you call them hags or crones or whatever, like, they're, and this is the more sexist reading of what a witch is, but a lot of them they're jealous of the younger, right. You know, Snow White, and the Seven Dwarves, or Snow White and the Huntsman, any of all the versions of Snow White, have some of that, as does even Hocus Pocus. You know, a lot of their goal is to kidnap as many kids on Halloween as they can and drain their life force so that they can stay young as long as possible. So yeah, the Neon Demon definitely, again, I don't think they say witches in the movie, but that definitely seems to be pulling from that tradition.
Yeah, another movie that kind of ties witchcraft in with a familiar background there, it's kind of using the fashion industry, but Suspiria uses the ballet company to form this kind of like covert coven of witches. I'm not down as down on the remake as a lot of people are. I think it's totally fine, but the original one from the 70s is pretty unbelievable. And it's one of those movies that I saw and I loved, and then I just kind of forgot about it, but I saw it again theatrically a few years later and was reminded again just how unbelievably cool it is.
Big confession, I never saw the Argento one. I did see the Luca Guadagnino one and enjoyed it, but I don't have the frame of reference. I liked the remake a lot.
Yeah, you would definitely dig the original. Yeah, the remake, if nothing else, and I wasn't sure about it for a long portion of it, but if nothing else, it has a pretty fantastic climax. Full-born witchcraft horror, just totally grotesque, very much could be a cover of a metal album kind of horror. and I've always been fond of it if nothing else.
So I'm getting near the end of my list, but and I have some of the things that I want to talk about, but one subcategory I want to talk about that I'm always kind of disappointed in, or at least from a witchcraft standpoint, these are often movies that I do like, but where the witches are just generic villains.
Okay.
You know, or I mean, I love the Blair Witch Project. I think it's a great movie, but I feel like we don't get to know that witch. You know what I mean?
My big confession is I've never seen the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, okay. Well, it's really, really good.
Sure.
I would definitely recommend seeing it. And then, another movie, we mentioned Gretel and Hansel, but there's also Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, in which they're the witches are just fodder for Jeremy Renner and Gemma Arterton, is that right?
Yeah. As I was making this list, I came across a lot like that, especially recently, it feels like. And for the most part, I just get discounted them because the witchery of it all was so incidental. I mean, that's apparently the case with, like, the Chronicles of Narnia stuff.
Okay.
And even, like, some of the other fantasy remakes. I mean, you mentioned Snow White and the Huntsman. And there's one other I had in mind. But a lot of what you're talking about is just kind of like, yeah, generic female villain. Needs to have some tie to magic. Let's make her a witch.
Right. Wait, are you calling Charlize Theron in Snow White and the Huntsman generic?
The structure of that villain is pretty generic. It's a fine performance.
And it's a great use of visual effects, I think. Multiple great uses of visual effects in that movie.
You have a stronger emotional attachment to this movie than I do, and I do not remember whatever you're talking about.
You remember all the, like, crows fly back into her bedroom and, like, sort of crash into the floor and pile, it looks like a pile of dead, like, soupy black crows.
Oh,
and
yeah, then, that's pretty cool.
Like, she forms out of the dead liquid crow bodies. It's very cool.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool. Very cool movie. Right. Yeah, I bought a new, not only I got a new TV recently, and I'm realizing that's a Blu-ray I should toss in on my TV and enjoy in its full visual glory and splendor.
Absolutely. I just realized, kind of looking through my list, another kind of subgenre is the unknowing regular guy falls in love with a witch.
Okay.
Kind of romantic comedy version. Probably most famously with Bewitched, either the TV show or the 2005 movie. Neither of which are, like, I think, terribly exceptional, but are kind of a good baseline for this. And then kind of somewhat more recently famous is, just because Criterion picked it up, is I Married a Witch, which I haven't seen in forever, but which kind of falls into the same kind of camp. and all these kind of use the idea of a witch to just kind of have this awesome woman who this guy feels completely incapable of keeping up with. I actually think the best version of the genre is Bell Book and Candle, in which what's her face? Kim Novak plays the witch. And I'm not like a huge Kim Novak fan, but she is super awesome in this movie and totally like compelling and beguiling and strange. And James Stewart kind of plays the hapless guy who gets involved with her. And to kind of shame James Stewart in kind of the prime of his career, where he couldn't have been a more formidable leading man. But here he just feels like everybody is helpless as he did in the 30s. Everybody kind of is out of his depth against Kim Novak. And it's really kind of a cool dynamic.
Yeah, I need to see those older movies. All my stuff is like, almost all my stuff is within my lifetime, especially the stuff that I have left to talk about. When we were talking about Disney, I meant to ask you, did you see Escape to Witch Mountain? Yeah. I did as a kid, but I couldn't tell you a thing about it.
Haven't seen the late sequel.
Oh, with
The Rock?
The Rock? Yeah, no, I forgot that existed until you said it. But also in Disney, Disney Witches Brave is a movie that I liked. But she goes to a witch and accidentally turns her mother into a bear.
There's another one where I remember the arc of the movie, but I'm like, someone turns her into a bear. I forgot it was a witch.
Yeah, it's a witch. I'll mention, just because I should have thrown this in there when we were talking about Rosemary's Baby, but Hereditary is a... kind of a Midsommar's so much better. I never really got the freak out appeal over Hereditary. It has some pretty intense scares, but I just think by the time I get to the end, I'm like, what did I just do with the last 2 hours and 10 minutes of my life? Like especially that ending when it gets more Rosemary's Baby-ish. I'm just like, come on, I've seen this.
Hereditary is interesting because the ending, or kind of the general climax, is pretty cool, I think, where it builds up the tension so much, and every second you're like, sure, it's going to come to a peak any moment, but it lasts for like 10 minutes or something. But at the same time, by the ending, it's so far abandoned the central struggle between the son and his mother that it stops mattering.
And I think, again, Midsommar's better, but I think Midsommar and Hereditary, and I've said this on the podcast before, both have the same, I guess, structural problem with me, where the things that happen at the beginning of the movie are so horrifying and upsetting to me that I never, like, everything else that happens is like, well, at least it's not the thing that happened. They're like, now we're getting into like cult stuff and witchcraft stuff, or whatever, but the real world terrible, terrible thing that happened at the beginning of the movie is still the worst thing that happens in the entire movie. I feel that way in both cases.
I actually think that's a bigger liability for Midsommar, even though I also like the movie more.
And then the one I didn't intentionally save it for last, but it's a personal favorite for me that has led me to internal sort of philosophical struggles about what it means for a movie to be a good movie. If you enjoy watching a movie, is it then just a good movie? Because I'm not fully on board with the, like, I'm enjoying this movie because of how bad it is thing.
Okay.
I love Teen Witch. I love watching Teen Witch. It makes me laugh throughout. I don't know how much of that is intentional or not, but I also feel like my love for Teen Witch is not ironic. I love this movie, but does that mean that I think it's a good movie? I struggle with this, but Teen Witch is still just such a delightful movie and so much better than Teen Wolf, which it's that's the reason it exists. It was like, oh, Teen Wolf's a hit. Let's make a version for girls. And it's so much better than Teen Wolf, which is a really, really dumb and sometimes mean spirited movie.
I've never seen Teen Witch, and I could talk about the general thing you mentioned for an entire episode if you ever wanted to do it. But I guess just in brief, my idea is that if you did enjoy it and you do genuinely love it, then it's kind of like what you guys have talked about before with like artist intent. Like at a certain point, the artist stops mattering once the thing comes out and it just is what it is.
Right.
And they must have been tapping into something either consciously or unconsciously that speaks to you in some way. So I'm not going to tell you what you think, but I would say that you probably just genuinely think this is a good movie.
Good, good. I'm glad that's where I tend to fall to. But yeah, so I've gotten to most of the big ones on my list. What else, anything on your list that you wanted to get to before we wrapped up?
Yeah, nothing major. Just want to mention a few in brief. Just kind of Macbeth in general, the plot of which is initiated by a group of witches, which is always, I've always found interesting. It's not like right. a super supernatural movie in most regards, but it does kick off with the small coven of witches casting a spell.
Yeah, and in, did you ever see Scotland, PA?
Like in high school.
Yeah, so I can't remember. It's I think it's, is it like Andy Dick is one of the witches?
Yeah, I remember that.
And Amy Smart, maybe?
Could be. I didn't know who she was then, so I couldn't say.
And I can't remember who the third one is. But yeah, I wish I'd thought of that.
Yeah. And then what else do I got here? Oh, another movie that I don't remember that well, but it's called Witchfinder General. I think there's some witches involved, and the movie kicks ass. So I thought I should mention it.
That's a Vincent Price
movie?
Yeah.
It's probably his... I mean, if you want to speak like purely dramatically, it's probably the best performance. Whether or not his comedic performances top it could be argued. I also just happened to watch Season of the Witch, the George Romero movie, very recently.
Okay.
And that's one where whether or not there's something supernatural happening is constantly in question. It could just be that she's just kind of losing her mind, but it's about a suburban woman who kind of gets into witchcraft, and it could be working or she could be losing her mind. And it's a super cool movie. Another one that I know you've seen, and which I also can't remember the extent of the witchery in it, The Witch Who Came from the Sea.
Oh yeah. It's not, she's not really a witch. She's just a murderer.
What I thought. But then I saw the title like,
yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't remember the details there. Well, we mentioned the Juniper Tree at the top without really kind of talking about it. And I just want to point that out as a super cool movie. And one of those that, like, the supernatural element and the witchcraft of it all gets into it, not slowly, but kind of so naturally that you don't even question it by the time it starts becoming a factor in the film. And it really puts you in the headspace of, like, being absorbed by and attracted to kind of the dark arts, as it were. And it's a short movie too. It's like 80 minutes or something and beautifully shot. And I think it's on Canopy these days, so it's really easy to see. And that actually is my entire list.
All right. The other one, I feel like we could do a whole other, I don't know if we could get as many examples, but there's a whole other category of like voodoo priestess that's also
I saw one of those just last night.
Okay,
which I meant to mention, that's why it's not on my list. I didn't update my list. Eve's Bayou, though.
Okay,
a great voodoo priestess movie about a young girl who announces at the top of the film that she was 10 years old and she killed her father, and the rest of the film kind of proceeds to show how she maybe does that depending on the extent to which the voodoo witchcraft of it all is actually happening. And that's another one where it's kind of up in the air. You get the impression that it's probably happening, but that doesn't necessarily make her directly responsible, but it kind of exists in this cool supernatural gray area.
And the only reason it came to my mind is when you said that Ursula is a sea witch, I had to Google. I was like, is Tia Dalma, the character played by Naomi Harris in the Pirates movies, is she a sea witch? But she's not really. She kind of has a voodoo priestess but then she turns out to be an actual goddess.
Yeah, for sure. One of my favorite stories to tell about movie going is the third Pirates movie.
I have heard you tell the story before.
I'm sure many listeners have seen me mention on Twitter or something, but I still enjoy telling it. So the third movie came out one summer when I was working as a stock boy at Nordstrom. So I was waking up at like 4 a.m. And for some reason, I decided to go see an 8 o'clock night showing of a 3-hour movie. Like, that's going to work out. So sure enough, I fell asleep. And I nod off a lot in movies. I rarely completely fall asleep, but I was gone for this. And then I woke up to a gigantic Naomi Harris terrorizing two boats in the midst of a gigantic storm, and I was like, clearly a great deal has transpired in the space between my blinks. I did later catch up with it many times over, and I absolutely love those movies.
Yeah, that's another opinion that you and I share. We might not see eye to eye on Snow White and the Huntsman or other stuff. But as defenders of Pirates 2 and 3, we are in cahoots.
For sure.
All right. Well, thank you for being here. Happy Halloween.
You
can find us at battleshippretension.com. You can email us at david@battleshippretension.com. I'll let Scott talk in a little bit. I'm on Twitter at Davey Pretension. This week on the website, I reviewed, I reviewed Martin Eden, and I reviewed Shithouse, and I reviewed the new Spike Lee joint, David Byrne's American Utopia. All of those reviews are up and available at battleshippretension.com right now. Scott, where can people find you should you want them to?
On Twitter at Rail of Tomorrow, and should be at least a few reviews by now from AFIFest on Battleship Pretension. And then at Criterion Cast, Spirit of the Season, we talked about The War Room, the documentary. I don't think the episode is posted yet as of this recording, but it should be soon.
Okay, well, thanks again, Scott. Thank you at home for listening, and happy Halloween.
Woo! We'll get you next time.
Bye. Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.